You're listening to The Good.
Don't call me Paino.
The Bad.
Absolute.
And The Rugby.
Folded like a deck chair.
With Paino, Lord, and the Husk. I don't know what that means.
Hello, Dream Team, and a very warm welcome to this week's episode of The Good, The Bad, and The Rugby in partnership with City Index, the leading provider of spread betting, CFD, and FX trading. Tins is on his bike this... Well, I hope he's on his bike this week, because the first post he's done from his marathon pedal, he's actually broken his wheels.
Has he?
Pulled it apart, getting it out of the car, I think.
Shut
He's unicycling up the Pyrenees.
Are you serious? He's nervous. Yeah. You know, like, it's all jokes
he
aside.
He wasn't very well at the weekend.
No, we did a little live event and he sneezed and things might have happened.
Yeah.
I think he's fully underestimated how hard this challenge is going to be. Like, he knows, but I think now he's got there. And he said he was at the airport and it was like blistering heat, like horrific.
I can't imagine he's very good in the heat.
No. Well, because also
big and hot.
He's a big man. Absolutely no barnet, so the sun's reaching straight through to that skull.
Yeah.
There's no escape. He's obviously got the nose that's now straightened, because before it was just the tip of it would get
tanned. He's not breathing well in the heat.
He's like, imagine like a bulldog locked in a car, right, with the windows down.
With the windows up.
The windows up, sorry.
Not enough.
Like a British bulldog. Okay, let's set the scene. British bulldog in a British car park with the windows up. He's been in there for 5 minutes and the breeze is... And sweat's
dribbling.
Just dripping out of his eyes. No, yeah, he can't think, can't speak. And now he's got to ride up a bike on essentially a saddle that they call the steriliser, which honestly will split his gooch and his testes to one side. And then what he's going to do is he's going to finish that day one and go, fuck, that was awful. Then remember, he's got six more days of hell. All raising money for Cure Parkinson. So please have a look on my Insta stories and Tins's to invest. Because you know what? This could be the last thing he ever does. You could be paying for some funeral expenses for Mike Tindall in with Cure Parkinson's.
3,000 miles a day at a 1 in 10 gradient. Go get him, my kid.
It's fucked.
No Tins, which is a shame because we've got a massive weekend of rugby to dissect and Husk is here.
that is
worrying. That's an oxymoron.
How many games did you watch? Well, let's not define it. Let's not box ourselves in with a particular number. Let's just say that some of it was watched by, like, as a distance. Like, I was in antenatal classes on Saturday.
By power of osmosis, you took in one or two
results. Okay, well, let me show you how the scene was. I had it on the radio in the car, got to the house. My wife put me under strict instructions. We had antenatal 4 hours on the Saturday, 5 hours on the Sunday.
Yeah.
Right? And I basically put it on Sky Sports, Sky Go app. And I was literally coming back to it and forward to it while it was in the kitchen. And that's how I saw the game. So there's absolutely no detail to anything I've got to say, but there never is.
Looking forward to your insight, therefore, because you haven't watched enough of it. I'm very glad, therefore, to say that we are joined by a Saracens and England legend, now entrepreneur.
Prestige. Well, why?
Boats and homes.
That was the wonderful quote from George W. Bush, wasn't
possibly
it?
Possibly you.
Who, despite being told that he's welcome back in England camp anytime, has jacked it in to go global with his business. He won the Premiership 4 times, Europe 3 times. He's a British and Irish lion, 45 England caps under his belt, and possibly the most flambé goal kicker in the game right now.
Heard it.
Was it 3 back heels or just one?
No, it was 1 back heel, but there were 3 conversions, isn't there?
Possibly, just getting that in there, just making sure
everyone
knows.
Lending the most curious scorecard of all time, therefore. What was Barbar's 45, Cruz conversions 3?
Yeah, it was a bit of an odd week, really.
Really?
A bit of an odd day, though. You don't expect that as a Barbars.
Was it? Surely you must have been practicing.
I wouldn't know, mate. You're looking at me as if you
wouldn't say that.
No, I never got a call. I couldn't. Every time I got called up for it, Wasp wouldn't release me. And then I was too old and decrepit to do it, unfortunately.
George Cruz, welcome, first of all.
Thank you. Thank you.
It's very nice to have you with us. We've got a lot to talk about. Business, rugby, bits and bobs in between. But with the Barbars, had you practiced your goal kicking in the week? I mean, were you told if we get up, we'll have a crack? Or do you just say, I'm having this in the moment?
We did a thing with Flats. I think he was like, he's basically suggesting that it's a tradition that people kick goals. And I actually thought that was a tradition. So then, I guess we started hammering out the goals. But there was, I had one shot and it went left. And then I think basically had to throw the ball over the post to pretend.
I mean, it really is a refined sport, Rob, isn't it? Yeah. Did you ever, because Mako's quite a good goal kicker, isn't he?
Mate,
did you back in the day at Saris, did you ever sort of plant the tee and say, 2 minutes to go, this to winner?
Yeah, like you run through those ridiculous scenarios. Yeah. I think I've won a few World Cups in those scenarios. Lost a lot more. But yeah, I think he's actually good. Like, you know, like the last, what, the five, if you're drawing a game and it comes down.
I reckon
he'd put him tail end of that, yeah.
Wow.
To tell you who would put
he's
in the tail
so
end
lazy
now,
to do it as well.
It's Tom Wood.
Really?
Did you see Tom Wood's conversion against Spain?
Yeah.
From the touchline.
Yeah.
And bear in mind, most of his body is like MDF wood, like with absolutely no flexibility. I know I'm the one to talk, but it's like rigid, rigid MDF legs that have got no extension. He just hoofed this ball over, curled it in as if absolutely it wasn't anybody's fucking business.
It was a wonderfully sort of 1970s goal. You know, when you had to kick, like, well, you wouldn't remember, but like when the ball weighed 2.5 stone and you had to really, like, both feet off the ground at connection point. It was sort of a bit like that.
Yeah, it was incredible. I want to know about you, Snoozes, because obviously I've never had the Barbarians week, and I know we're going to come on to so much rugby in your career. But actually, what was it like? Because there was a very French tint, and I saw a clip when you got sort of announced as captain, and Galtier sort of talking, and it was like you sort of waiting to know what was actually being said. It was like it said something in French, and you're looking around, and then someone goes, "George, it's you," and you're like, "Oh yeah, just thanks so much to the French Barbarians." Was it that loose? Do you have any idea what you were doing?
Not Scooby. Like he was like, right, first meeting, he was like, "Look, George, we're going to speak in English. Make this really, really useful for you." Nah, it's like you got bang on the head and completely forgot it. He literally didn't speak a lick of English.
And were you? How many English people were in the team,
Michael? We had a couple of people who, like Chris Dolefier, who could like translate, and obviously was at Sarah's as well. Will Skelton, a couple of Ireland as well. Like there was enough to understand. And GCSE,
it wasn't like a
French
exchange.
Gets
you weren't like a French exchange student that goes. You know, you go to bed with a family and they don't speak a word of English.
I actually
did that when I was probably 11 or 12, and I was so unhappy I went to bed at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I couldn't say anything to anybody. I just wonder whether that was like your Barbarians experience or whether there were one or two.
No, it wasn't.
It
was just 4 a.m. to be honest. It was. Right. Yeah.
Did they stitch you up though? Did like the French?
I thought there would be a bit of a stitch up, but they fully embraced it. Like they loved it. I think they used that as you know, one of those like memory making trips, kind of create a bit of culture, a bit of vibe, and you know, for him to have that, it's worked pretty well. Everything's paid for, everything's sort of sorted out. You know, a couple of different experiences.
And with Sean Edwards, was he speaking French? I know, because I haven't heard it, but I can imagine it.
I imagine it's quite Hammer and Anvil.
It's like he's got, I don't know, 30 words and they just on repeat, but it's highly effective. Yeah, it's like, exactly that. It's like, parsecur, très bon, everything's like kind of a double repeat, but he's also unbelievable.
Yeah.
And they like properly listen to him and like, he gets the job done. So
he's some fucking amazing coach. But I can imagine, I wonder, because I've seen him speak French in an interview where he sort of has a northern French accent. But you're right, I can imagine placage.
Mate, it's all
avant, à gauche.
Yeah.
Où est le ballon?
Yeah.
Le ballon.
Sur le ballon. And it'd just be repeated. But hey, effective.
But you had fun though, because I did sort of wonder whether, obviously because it was amazing because of how good the players were, but I did sort of wonder whether one of the things about the Barbarians Week is when you hear from people, it's kind of built on the chat and the camaraderie. And I certainly know my time at Stade Francais, everyone's having a laugh and I'm like, yeah, we. And you don't know what the fuck's going on. But it was all right for you, was it?
Nah, it was brilliant. When I first saw the list and then I first saw our training schedule and it had four gym sessions. It had like three training sessions, one was against French under-20s, one was against Ealing. And I was thinking, this is more gym than I'd ever done in a normal week, like let alone a Barbarians week. But essentially, we got there and he just ripped the manual up. And I think the French S&C coach was like, this is a different type of week. This is like his week. And then everything went out the window. We had, you know, we didn't have breakfast till Friday. We had two 45-minute training sessions, which were extremely French.
Jouer,
but like you get to like 30 minutes, they're like, oh, this is crap. Let's just turn it on. And then they just absolutely dusted the French under-20s. And then same again with Isha. Like, just very, very relaxed. And then suddenly it's like, someone was just like, I'll do something now. And then it just,
Really?
So French, yeah.
What were the nights out like? Were there, was it famous thing when during the COVID thing that everyone ruined it because they went out, didn't they?
That was Golden Boy.
They're still doing they're still doing community service for that. Yeah. Honestly, mate.
Do the crime, do the time.
A lot, yeah. A lot of those lads were the Sarah's lads, and they.
Oh really?
Yeah, they're still.
When you ruined rugby, what have you done? Ruined rugby.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ruined everyone today. But what? But you did have a couple of times, a couple of nights out. What does that involve? Yeah. Any drinking games? Because I know the French, they're great on the field, but also they've sort of got that Latin sort of spirit. The smash doesn't start for them until a good like 12 at night.
Yeah, you
know,
yeah.
Just as you're going, oh, probably a bit tired now, go to bed. They're just into their second
sort of continental. Yeah. Flavor. Yeah.
He's had 8 hours in bed in France.
Yeah, you have.
Absolutely.
You were crying when you were wetting the bed again.
Well, I then get up. You see, I get up at the right time, 2 a.m.
Yeah, but when you went to your French exchange thing, you went to bed at 4 crying, missing mother, you know, mater and pater, and in your little school uniform.
Yeah, all right. We're not here to talk about my French exchange days. Did you talk to... I was interested. Did Eddie say, get me some intel while you're in there?
No.
No?
No, that wouldn't say that's his style.
No. What did you make of the game itself, actually? Was it quite weird? I saw you belting out the national anthem, but it was a funny old game.
Yeah, it was weird. It was just weird playing against a lot of players that you know, and then obviously the national anthem, all that sort of bits. But like, I just took it for what it was, which is a Barbars game.
Yeah.
I went out there to just try and have as much fun as possible. Yeah. It should be lighthearted. It should be a good advertisement for the game. It should be.
Did you kind of find it a bit weird playing against the guys in terms of did anyone give you any shit? Like, tread on you at the bottom of the rut, fuck off, Cruiser, stop kicking the ball over the post?
I heard someone shout run at Cruiser as loud as they could. I'm pretty sure it was Charlie Yules, but yeah, and he ran at me and absolutely bounced me. So.
Really?
No, not yours, Curry.
Oh, really?
And then I also got bounced by Jack Knowles, which was lovely.
Right.
But he's actually a powerful fucker.
He's a powerful man,
oh my God, yeah. But yeah, it was good. So, yeah, but it's the sort of game you can just have a laugh about it.
Did you get a bit of heat as well? Because I didn't see the game. Shock. But I saw the kicks. And then I saw Eddie sort of, or someone talk about you being disrespectful by the kick. Did you get a bit of heat from that on social media? Was it bullshit?
I did this like jersey thing the other day, and they like surprise attacked me with a list of like mean tweets, and it was all like people just saying, "Oh, it's disrespectful," this, but really, like, nah, not heaps. Just Clive Woodward.
What did he say? What the fuck did Clive Woodward say now?
I knew that would trigger.
What did he say?
He's so angry about it.
No, because it's like, Clive, have a Kit Kat, take a break, sheep. It's not 2005, you're not involved anymore. Okay. And do you know what the best thing about Clive is? I love you, Clive. Incredible legacy. You're not going to get the job over Eddie in terms of that director of rugby role that you're so desperate. He keeps suggesting every article. It's like, I tell you what Eddie really needs is he's got to have to stop this autonomy that he's had. He needs someone in between him and the senior management. Clive, what does that person look like? Don't tell me. Does his name rhyme with Schmive Schmidwood?
It's Rob Andrew.
Yeah, well, would you like to replace Rob Andrew? That's what he wants. And he's so desperate to have it. But take a break, Clive. What did he say?
He just said it was disrespectful.
Oh, bore off, Clive. Not even funny. Not even original.
Yeah.
My kid loved it.
What Clive Woodward said?
No, my 9-year-old son isn't reading Clive Woodward.
Oh, right.
He enjoyed the conversion. You know he actually also, like I said, this is Streaker and the Mexican Wave were the two best bits of the...
Do you know what someone surprised me the other day? You know, someone surprised him with some mean tweets. Someone surprised me the other day with some nice tweets. It was
that's a shorter show than his.
Short, it was actually three things, and two of them from my wife.
Is that it? So are your boots now in the potting shed?
Yeah.
You are de ne?
Yeah, I think so.
And how are you feeling about that?
Yeah, pretty good. Oh, you know, I'm relaxed. Like I said, I've done what I've wanted to do in rugby. I'm pretty like I could do another couple of years. I do like obviously all the bits about rugby, which are brilliant. But then the other bits where you know you're giving up your weekends, you're giving up. There's heaps of sacrifice, and I'm not saying that's like I'm not whinging about it, but it's just the right time for me to do something different.
Do you want to play at all? Would you do sort of? You know, grassroots trot around at centre or...
No, I'm definitely not doing any of that. Like Dom, my co-founder with a business, he's
Who's
playing...
Who's he playing for?
He was playing for an Irish team and he broke his cheekbone the other day. So I was just thinking, there's no hope in hell I'm doing this.
I would highly recommend you do not do that.
Yeah.
Because someone will fall on your leg and what you'll discover is that you don't have any insurance, you have to pay for it yourself.
Yeah, it's
not worth it. Can I pay
this
you?
Nose cannot get any bigger as well.
I
don't
say,
want to get any. Yeah,
you've hung your boots up, but you've escaped that. That beak, genuinely, the size of that beak, it should look like Tinsy's. How has that not got broken off?
Because there's feel it. Feel it. There's nothing in it.
Oh God! Oh, it's been smoked to bits.
No, it's just a balloon.
Right, like it's bulbous. Like
bulbous. There's nothing really to it.
Do you know what they call it? A carbuncle when you've got a big bulbus nose. If you Google what a carbuncle is, that's what one
it's
is.
Like Gerard Depardieu.
Yes.
Yeah.
Big carbuncle nose.
And are you, therefore, you're happy with your lot?
By the with sound my of lot?
It? Yeah, as in with the career and...
Yeah. Yeah, I know where I started. So to finish from where I started, it was pretty good, yeah. To play for England, to get... I think some of those like Heineken Cup trophies and those sort of things, they're pretty gold dust. They are very special, along with like the mates you've been trying to work for it for forever. So, I'm really happy. And then to go out to Japan, pick up another couple of trophies there, which was like just something completely wild.
How was Japan as an experience, as a whole?
Just like the only way I can think of describing it is different. It is like a different world. It's something which is... obviously the culture, everything, but the food's different. You go to a supermarket and you just walk around and I'm just in my head laughing because there's just so much, which is just, you just think this is bizarre.
Totally.
It's when you see the kind of the fish counter or the bits and it's like they've caught everything in between the top of the sea and the bottom of the sea and then they've taken a digger and dug everything out the bottom in the sea and the stuff that I didn't know existed.
Yeah.
Like objects that you would, not be out of place on the X-Files, in a bat, you're like, what is that? Like, what the fuck is that? Yeah. And they're eating it live, boiled up. Yeah. You go to a 7-Eleven, you know, like you go to...
I'm sure they call it a BAP in Tokyo.
You have to be very careful because you make a joke, you're instantly Jim Davidson in a band. But like, when you go to a service station here, the best thing you see at a BP is one of them rollover things that only truckers with the iron constitution would eat. No one's ever eaten one of them. At 7-Eleven,
full of mercury or something.
Yeah, 7-Eleven, you've got pork buns. You've got shit bubbling away. Like something from, you know, the witches bubbling away in pots. Like every now and then an eye will just float to the surface. And you see a Japanese salaryman come in steaming, ladle some of this gear into a bowl and shuffle off. You're like, who's ordering?
Fall asleep in a bush.
Yeah. Upside down in a bin. Who's eating this stuff?
Yeah, but it tastes unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean,
it tastes unbelievable.
I mean, this rig's not powered on service station food, but I imagine someone like yourself with similar chass would be eating at 7-Eleven pork buns.
It's good. It's good. It's good gear.
Get it in you.
And you weren't tempted to do another year?
I was, just because I think with Japan, like you get 5 months, on the contract I had, you get five months off, so I could do bits like business. I could just about sort of take that sort of sacrifice of not seeing, you know, your friends and family, all that sort of stuff. But I was considering it. But I spent a good couple of months really thinking through my options and then, you know, decided to put the boots up.
I tell you what we'll do. Let's have a quick... Do you now you've retired, are you done with it all? Or did you watch Saturday's action?
I did watch the game on Saturday, yeah.
And is that because... And will you continue to do that? Or is that just because you've literally just retired?
I think probably because there was a few boys like Billy and stuff. Yeah. I'm obviously so pumped for him to be back in the mixer. I just wanted to see him kind of get... Yeah. See how he went on, really.
Let's do a little bit on Saturday and then we'll come back to your career and what's next. Because it's really, really interesting. It's particularly interesting for us, I think, because we have championed and you have repeatedly said players who... don't look out for what's coming next are making a huge mistake. I don't think any of us have ever said become so successful that you quit your career and your prime type thing. But we'll come back to all that. What did you make? Did you speak to Billy pre-game, post-game? Did you ping him a message or two?
No, I didn't actually. No. Or post-game. I don't really like him that much.
Right, okay.
No,
he wouldn't reply.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So
what did you make of
it? In a dustbin.
What did you make of it? Welcome to the dark side of media and judging and feedback and all that kind of thing. Was it a tough watch as someone who knows the setup as well as you do?
I thought it was a tough watch. I thought they'd lose the first one, and then I think they'll win the next two. You know, probably just need a bit more time to gel together. Clearly, they had an opportunity especially with the sin bin or the red card. Like, there's an opportunity missed there.
Not going straight into the media, then, George.
No, this is one thing I'll actively avoid, but. I don't know. What do you think of it?
Excellent.
I only ask questions. You have watched enough of it.
Yes. He watched the Twitter highlights.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. That's how I get through my career. Look, I think it's a tough one because at the moment where I felt with this England side previously, especially, you know, around the 2019 and sort of post it to a certain degree, they could finish off difficult games. Yeah. And you never felt like they were going to become unstuck. You know, I think post the Six Nations, you know, you and I were talking about it pre-show, the Scotland moment, we'd had an opportunity. If Luke Handy hadn't had that moment, we've all had them, made that mistake, it would have been a different game. This, they had a red card. They didn't capitalise. Yeah. And I think that was what frustrated Eddie more than anything because
they will talk about scenarios. They will talk about going up a gear, talking about when you have incidents in the game that stop the game and pause the game, which are turning points. It's the side that has the most reactivity, the most energy, the most clarity, the most execution over role will be able to do that. And I think this, in the moment, this England side, at times when you think they need to seal a game, will miss a kick, will, you know, compound errors.
Yeah.
And they don't necessarily have that ruthlessness. And I don't know what the answer is at the moment. I think actually, when people say about scorelines, oh, you know, it flattered, it's flattered them. Fucking at the end of the day, it's the scoreline. It doesn't matter how they got there. It might have flattered them, but the end of the game is they lost by, was it, how many?
Two
points. Yeah. So the point is that, you know, there's a way to do it, but I don't think they need to be in that position. I think that if they can execute, if they can play and not compound these errors, they need to find this ruthless edge that will make a difference. But I think one highlight of it is, again, go to Australia and find someone, Arundel.
Yeah.
And fight and see what he can do in the first 5 minutes. That, you know, I mean, what a positive moment for that kid.
I mean, it sort of transformed.
That's a ridiculous start.
It sort of transformed the entire game.
Yeah.
Because suddenly, from what was an unbelievably disappointing result, everyone's now, Jesus Christ, we found something, I mean, really very, very special. Who was the last player that made you think, wow, like that? You got a rack your brains.
Player, yeah. Nah, I mean, clearly that Freddie Stewart looks pretty good, doesn't he?
Yeah. Like,
he looks legit.
But you don't get many players. Yeah.
No,
who,
but Marcus Smith, I mean, I remember Marcus Smith is one. I think, but someone like Arundel is interesting, because again, for someone who has not a great attention span for rugby, I remember going in to do some stuff with the England under 21s. I mean, they haven't won a game since I came in, but previous to that,
thanks
I was doing,
for help.
Oh, you're welcome. And they were basically, I was looking and doing some research on the 21s team just to see what was going on, see what the messages.
I think it's under 20s.
Under 20s, sorry. It's not nitpick. It was under 21s in my day.
Yeah, they are all under 21 because they're also under 20.
Yeah, they are, so, exactly. Yeah. You're welcome. Yep. And so just keep saying you're welcome and that covers it up. Oi, tested you. You've passed the test. You can move on to the next level of broadcasting. Wanted to set you up.
Right.
But I looked at on the highlights and there was this kid, and I remember seeing him play against Wales and Ireland. And like one of them, he chipped the ball, volleyed it round, scored, boom, footwork, was incredible. And I went in and going, who the hell is that? And they said, oh, it's Arundel. So where is he? He goes, well, London Irish didn't pick him at all. Then he went away to under 20s, carved up, and they were like, oh, actually, we can have him back now.
Yeah,
suddenly
yeah,
they'd seen him, didn't realise the talent. And because he then got those opportunities in the first team, kicked on, obviously had that unbelievable moment in the European Cup, which was that end-to-end, next level try. And then when you get in the confidence to come on, and I do wonder though, you know, they always talk about second season syndrome, is you look at him, you think, oh, he's a young kid, and you see him run into those two Australian, Kellaway and the other guy, and you think they've sort of gone, oh, we'll deal with him, gone in a bit half-hearted, and he's absolutely destroyed and run off.
Yeah.
I don't know how many chances you get when you have that. I remember when I first tackled Sam Simmons, and I thought, oh, he's small, I'll deal with him. And he ran so hard, I tackled him, but he's knocked me back. And I was like, wow, and you sort of then learn about it. So I think he's got so much potential to kick on. But what's so good about him is the footwork, the unbelievable turn of pace, the fact that he can kick out of hand with great handling skills. He looks like the real deal without hyping up too much and putting too much pressure on him. But to get a cameo like that and to turn what was, you know, a disappointment for England, it wasn't the end of the world. I mean, I didn't lose sleep over it. I didn't go, God damn, Eddie Jones must go. I went, okay, never mind. Didn't really capitalise. Boys would be disappointed. Be shit going to Australia and having probably a good preparation, not getting it. But at least we've got a positive from him.
Do you want to talk us through how and why Owen missed that goal, given that you...
Yeah, I think he didn't look down long enough, you know. I'll pick it up with him, but...
Do you speak to Owen a bit? Is he happy? Is he all right?
I'll speak to him enough, yeah. But like, again, he's, you know... He's a bit of an island, isn't he? Like he'll happily wear that. And then you look at how well he played in, say, the Prem semi-final and things like that. He's an unbelievable player. So I think a lot of it, I think, is around like the law changes, more of an attacking game. They've got to kind of change the team, and therefore they've got to have time for that to gel. I think it's more like the game we used to play was very much defensive. It was very much set piece. It was very much suited the players that were in the team. So now it has been pushed a little bit more attacking. Like, you're going to have to change your game plan, and that involves, if you change your game plan, that involves changing players, and that involves taking a bit more time. So I think that's where the media are a bit frustrated, and you know, they're clearly not going to give it time to sink in.
Why do you think they'll win the next two tests? What did you see?
I thought that they'd just get a bit of a kick and get on with it. Yeah, I like the look of the squad. I like the look of the players. Yeah, I think they just needed a bit of a kick and a bit more time to gel. From a Prem final, you're pretty much there the next day, and you've got a week maybe together, and then you get, you know, if you can get a game, get another two weeks training, then yeah, I'm excited for
bear in mind half that team has never played for England together. You know, you've got to tweak some players who were tested, but again, I think it's a experiential kind of experience to play that first test away, cauldron off Australia, like you said. You know, tweak a few bits, but you know, Billy hadn't played, Danny hadn't played in that England side.
I do think the English team is a better team than the Australian team, so that's where my confidence comes from in terms of I think it will be 2-1, but just needs a bit more time together.
I agree.
Did you see Mara get told off for screaming and shouting?
I didn't.
Did you not see? So I think it was the first line out, and he, I mean, you could hear him.
Yeah.
Almost from back here, and the referee said, "Any more of that, and you get a yellow card." I mean, he was at his very, very most nausea. I would go so far as to say, having trained alongside him for a decade, does that still ring in the ears, or did you manage to block that out?
Yeah, I put little earmuffs in whenever I'm training. But now there's a type of, exactly what you're saying in terms of you'll have a player, and then either a ref or other players will sort of figure out what they're up to, what they're doing, and they'll come up with different systems, but. I think with him is he does look to constantly evolve. Like, you know, he plays the laws very well a lot of the times. He'll learn different tricks, little bits, and in terms of how you can stick to the laws. And I think he's always going to be picked, isn't he? He's a top player.
I think as well. Credit to Australia, you know.
Get those games, don't you? The 14 men often.
But we saw it with England. Yeah. Was it England versus Ireland?
Yeah.
You know, that was probably the best 30 minutes the guys have played since the World Cup. Final where they all gel together and it can galvanise. I think when it, you know, again, people chastised Eddie because he said, "Oh, look, I think the referee tried to level it out." I didn't see enough of it to know, but it is. You know, when you make a brave decision in a test match to bin someone like that, surely you know it's human nature to start going, "Fuck me, I've given a red card to them." You know, that's a pretty big moment. I need to make sure that I'm on the money and not allow anything else to slide. So even subconsciously, it may or may not happen. So I don't think they intentionally do it, but I think subconsciously it might happen. And obviously, losing that moment, you're going to get round and go, "Fuck me, lads, we have to work for each other here." And it can give you an extra gear, and it can either be the undoing of you, it can be the motivator. And credit to Australia, you know, Michael Hooper was unbelievable as always.
Karevi,
you know, those players as well. Yeah. They've got a young dynamic team in a position of transition. You know, they lost Quade Cooper. I think it'll be a big moment for them as well. But as George said, come to the second test, let's see what happens. But I think the narrative about changing and firing everything, I don't think it's going to happen. But if it does, I think it's going to be 10 times worse for this team.
Yeah,
let's keep the powder dry, obviously, until the series is decided. And it's certainly the way England were talking off the bat, they were extremely pumped. I thought Jack Van Portvliet, actually, for a young kid who's played 2 minutes, scored a try, came off and said gutted with the result, really pleased about the debut, we've got to win 2-1. I thought it was a really a strong statement. Have you got any interest in coaching at all?
No.
None?
I think if you do coaching...
Because you were a student of the game.
I like learning. I like that side of it. I just think if you do coaching... You've got to do it well, otherwise your life's just a mess. Like you're going to be pulled apart. You've got no uncertainty. So, and to do it well, you've got to put in unbelievable hours. Like you've got to be good. The sacrifice is not just at the weekends; it's then into like evenings, watching tape, all that sort of stuff. Especially in maybe a space where I'd look to go and coach, like in that sort of bit more nausea, sort of you've got to know what's going on type thing.
Yeah. And is it something that as soon as you've gone from the game, you've always said, Hass, that the sport moves so quickly that once you're out, you're properly out. It's not something you'd ever come back to because potentially the game will have moved on, or it's something you keep an eye on?
If the business flops and I'm living on a cardboard box, then I might have to head back and get some leg squats in or something. But look, for me, I think I am really motivated by different memories, different chapters, sort of exploring and that side of it, and for me this is a new chapter. It's literally as simple as that, I reckon.
I have talked to some guys recently who have transitioned into coaching,
And I think there's this, because it's the same question everybody are. I'm not saying it will turn this integrity into a question.
Get some original questions.
Yeah, but it is the question.
Pulling apart at the seams, having worked with you. Go on.
It is the question that everybody asks, but it's sort of asked with the mindset of like, oh, it's pretty easy. You just go in.
No, that's not. I was actually asking it more because you had a great sort of relationship with Borthers, didn't you? Weren't you the sort of the protege to Borthers?
Yeah, I'd
his illegitimate enough, son. The Borthers wouldn't admit to having, but. Yeah. We'd send a food parcel around.
Daddy.
Loves marrow. Not so keen on this one.
Daddy.
But that's why I was sort of interested as to, you know, obviously having worked with him a great deal and seeing what he's doing, whether there was any sort of burning intention in that regard or whether that's gone.
I think that's the answer. Like you don't have to really want to do it, like unbelievably a lot to give it a good enough stab to actually be good at it.
Yeah.
And I just... Yeah, I think my interests lie elsewhere.
Because that's what I meant about just, it's a horrific job. So that's what I was trying to say, is that it's asked not by you today, but asked by people as something that seems so easy and would be a natural progression. I would say it's got all the worst parts about being a professional sportsman with none of the fun.
Yeah, you don't get to jump on the field. Yeah.
You don't get to play. You've got to look at so much footage. Yeah. You have to be so prepared. You don't, all the days off the players get, you don't get. You have to be in there first, have to stay longer, then have to have difficult conversations. You don't get to play on the field. You can spend all week training a team to do something you can just do completely fucking opposite on the field. You're the first one they bollock. Yeah. Everyone you select loves you. Everyone you don't select hates you.
Yeah.
If you're a support coach, everyone in the squad's always in your team, which is the perfect crime because they always come out going, oh, listen, I know you're not on the team, but I would have picked you. But when they are coach... You go, well, you said when you were backup coach that I was being your team. Yeah, sorry, now we've got to make a decision. Turns out I'm fucking not. You know, that's why scrum coaches always have 36 players in their 15-man squad because they can say that to everyone. All these support coaching jobs is horrific. You know the head coach, because it's obviously a male-dominated sport.
Yeah.
Male ego is a real thing. When does everyone turn around and go, I got it wrong? First thing they look at is, fucking hell, George, line out went shit. Mm. And then it's always the fitness coaches who get it. Like, well, the boys weren't fit enough.
Right.
Lads weren't fit enough. You're like, what do you mean they weren't fit enough? Do more fitness. And then when we do more fitness, the lads look tired.
Yeah.
It's just...
Overfit. Overtrained.
It goes round. I think it's horrific. And do you know what? So many people get into it. And actually, I think that's why a lot of players have issues in mental health, because they go into it and it's horrific. They get less time at home.
I'll tell you one thing. Physio. That's got to be even worse. You are in every Sunday picking up people's like elbows and sticking them back on. It's like, it's relentless being a physio and you get nothing. You get no like wraps, where you might get a bottle of champagne at the end of the season and that is it.
Yeah, and now if you get it wrong, you get sued.
Yes,
now if you get it wrong, 100%. You're part of a legal case.
Yeah.
Now you go, oh, and also the best bit is with physios, being in the season, they're like, right, you've got medical budget. George, knee, we'll scan that, elbow scan that. Halfway through the season when they burst through the budget, like, oh, probably test that on Monday.
Yeah, yeah.
That's okay.
Academy kids walking around with broken limbs. And you're like, look, it will be...
Yeah, hop on that,
Have a strepsil.
Hop on that, bone goes through, water. Strap that on, sponge that. It's a nightmare.
It's so funny what you're saying, because actually this was the point that Eddie was making last week, is he said, show me a coach in the game that's not under pressure. And you look at, I mean, Dave Rennie, brilliant, they won, but... He lost the previous three.
Mm.
There's a huge amount building on him. Eddie, obviously, we know about. Ian Foster's had a terrible time at the hands of the Kiwi media. Farrell, off the back of suddenly losing by 40, he was quite tetchy in his post-match conference. South Africa were dire in the first half.
PVAC's lived on the edge.
PVAC is properly on the edge at the moment. They blow a game that they should have won.
Townsend
loses in Argentina and obviously had a pretty tough Six Nations. Chequers obviously only just taken over Argentina. Fabien Galthié is the only man smoking a cigar at the moment.
And he is. Yeah, he's...
And that can turn. They're probably going to be all right for a bit longer.
Yeah, but I mean, but the thing is, but if anyone can turn, it depends how catastrophic the balls up is. Because, you know, obviously, when you said about the crowd in the Stade de France is back, they are back at the moment and they're singing.
But they turn faster than anyone. Yeah,
they are. Absolutely. Honestly. They've been chucking newspapers in seconds.
Right, yeah. I've seen a London taxi turn quicker than that. Like, do you know what I mean? They are on it.
It's a tough gig. Quick word then. All Blacks, brilliant, good enough.
I think this All Black side are very, very good. I think that, fool anyone that underestimates their ability. Do they fill you with invincible fear? No, I would say not quite yet. I think they have that. And I think actually, with that post second half start from Ireland, you know, with that intensity, unfortunately, it's almost so sad that you end up scoring because then you reset and go back for the kickoff and you're back in your half and then they suddenly took the momentum. Yeah. If they could somehow keep the momentum on, I think Ireland would have done something with that. I think they do look beatable at times, but guys like Ardie Sevier, Sam Kane back in the mix looking on fire, you know, massive decision to start Bowden Barrett and put Richie Maunga, who's been the form 10 in the Super, whatever the hell the league's called
Super
now.
Rugby Aotearoa.
Yeah, that's the one.
I'm not even sure it is that anymore.
Is it not? It's a Super something, isn't it? But they, Super Rugby, it's just not Super something. And they, you know, to then bring him on, I just thought also to bring the bench on. They do look great, but I don't think they're quite the Richie McCaw, Dan Carter world beaters yet. Yeah. But I think they're in a good position going to the World Cup. And I think you have to be at your best. And if you don't, you're going to get absolutely torn apart. And that's what Ireland showed. I don't think Andy Farrell was wrong. And actually, they didn't play badly. They just had those moments, those lapses. And unlike, say, for example, you have a lapse against England, we probably don't have the ability to convert that with the same intensity. Have a lapse against New Zealand, interception, you know, turnover, Ardie Sevier's finishing it, guys on one side, Seve Reese is scoring tries. That, for me, is the big difference.
Yeah. Do you still believe in Ireland? Or is this, obviously, we'll see what happens in the next 2 weekends. Mm. But there'll be a horrible sort of familiar story beginning, which is that they've peaked mid-World Cup again if they come back three. Well, actually, could be 5-0 because they've got 2 games against the Maori as well. So they need something from somewhere, don't they?
It's a tough gig, isn't it? Like, I'm sure you play down, what was it, 2011 tour?
Yeah. And 14.
Like, you go there, it's some of the places are shitholes. Like, you understand, like, there's not heaps to do around there. There's not... If you can't get that motivation from somewhere, it's pretty hard to just find it. Yeah. You know, I think like obviously they'll be excited, and there will be a kickback, and it won't be a score like that. But you know, like it's
quite a lonely. I think what I mean is like it's quite a lonely place. Like when you, because it's such a beautiful place, New Zealand, and such a kind of an incredibly culturally rich place. But in terms of like rugby, it's the only place we go and tour where it is all about rugby.
Yeah, everybody they let you know big time.
Yeah, and you sort of go to these sort of different locations and you go to these stadiums and you have a few travelling fans, but it is very hostile, bit dewy on the ground, and it can be a very long night. And I've been there, you know, 2008, two tests or three tests, absolutely drilled, 45 points. 2014, I think, was the best opportunity we ever had.
Very nearly won the first test.
Very nearly won. And if it hadn't been for, you know, if...
Manu got caught.
But also, every time we went on a try-scoring opportunity, Davey Wilson, the prop, was in the way with his one broken arm and his hand. It was like, Davey, get out of the fucking way. But then also the number 10, I can remember what his name is at the time.
It's Aaron Cruden.
Aaron Cruden, every single time, would have kicked and said he tapped and went.
Yeah.
And you're like, of all the other teams, no one would have done that. Because he did it, he scored. And Stuart Lancaster took a couple of people off, changed it.
I think Freddie Burns played 10 that day, actually.
He might have done.
Because I think I think he did.
But I mean, that was when, you know, that was when Chris Robshaw made that break. Roman only pulled me back from my shirt, but only, you know, didn't get a yellow card. Nigel Owens sort of just said, oh, you know, bit of a bad play. You're like, he's hanging on to me, and we're on to score. And we saw, and that for me was when I played against All Blacks, and I came off, and I said, that was not an All Blacks side I'd ever faced before. They didn't have the intensity. They didn't have that kind of thing because that was their first test of the season.
Yeah.
The first time they were together at Eden Park. It was the only time we'd have beat them. And then I didn't play in the second or third test, and they just ramped up, went up until they absolutely battered us. And that's the difference. You get one chance on tour to do a job on them before they get together. Yeah. And they're incredible. What I mean as well is exactly what George says. Sometimes you go there, and if things aren't going well, it is quite isolating because everything's geared towards you not winning. Not in a nefarious way, but it just doesn't work out that way. And you have to sort of become very insular and you're not looking for any crowd support. You have to dig deep. And I think, luckily, this Ireland team, because they have a legacy of beating them, I think it actually isn't a problem. And I think they will come back. I think they will come back stronger. But, you know, New Zealand will be in their groove again now, pumped up.
Yeah. And like with New Zealand, obviously, they were killing it kind of pre-World Cup in 2019.
Yeah.
And like, you know, they don't have that big pressure they do at the moment because they are on a bit of a transition sort of phase. But it'd be interesting to see in 2023 where they get to. Like, they're building just as much as any other team is.
And you know of any side in the world, just, you know, that they're always, the priority is always being better in that shirt. And they talk about it the whole time, and they have such a conveyor belt of players. You know, there'll be players that will be in that 2003 squad that we're only just hearing about now or haven't heard about, and they have such a rich wealth of talent. But when guys like Beauden Parrott, Ardie Sevilla, Sam Kane, Brodie Retallick, Sam Whitelock are still doing a job, and Aaron Smith, you know, I mean, I think there was some question marks over selection, you know, because the Highlanders didn't necessarily do particularly well.
Yeah.
But he's still the best nine in the world. Well, sorry, up there with the best nine in the world with Dupont. You know, different players, but equally just unbelievable. And I also think that, you know, the fact that they're so proud, and you know, they're good men, make good All Blacks. So
yeah.
I reckon they're in a good place.
I played with a lad in Japan. He was got Lachlan Boshier. He unbelievable, like killing it. I think he was getting like 5-6 turnovers a game, like killing it. And he left Japan because he was sort of like your fifth in line. I was thinking, you know, there's four other people who are deemed better than him. I know coaches can pick, dependent or game plan can decide whether you're in or out. But like, it was a bit scary that I was thinking, wow,
the talent is ridiculous.
That's a big move. You know,
can we also have a shout out for? I mean, just I've never come across a name as good as this. There was a guy actually used to play in South Africa called Cheese Van Tonda.
That's a lovely
which
name.
Is a great name. But the All Black who made his debut at the weekend is Leicester, Ofaki, Wales, Twickenham, Fainga, Anuku.
Mega name.
Yeah, good. Love good that. On him.
Wales, Twickenham as your middle name.
If he didn't play rugby though, I mean, that's sort of wasted. You had to be good.
Yeah.
You've got to be on a global scale.
Like, I'm trying to think about names for my daughter, and it's like, oh. Yeah.
You call it King's Own or something.
No. I've just sort of, you know, Tesco's, Asda, Little Haskell. You know what I mean?
Amdo.
Quick fit. I haven't run this past my wife, right? And I don't know where the social services will get involved. I will just name her for a year for that cash. And I'll also change my name to something for cash.
Well done, Leicester. Offer Key, Wales, Twickenham, Fainga, Anuku.
That's just a good
looking
name.
Forward to him, hopefully, a career that blossoms from here. Hard Luck Ireland, go the at the weekend. South Africa 32, Wales 29. Willemse with the last gasp penalty. Bigger, Alan Wynne, Lewis Rees-Sammet and Reece Curry all sin-binned. Some of them, I simply couldn't get a handle on why. That is a heartbreaker for Wales, isn't it?
I gutted for them because it was so close.
Did you see that coming?
Could you see him getting anywhere near that?
Yeah, no. Yeah. Which is amazing. Like, but who's that? Is that South Africa or is that Wales?
Wow. Again, we'll see with the next testing whether it was a sharp enough for South Africa, whether they weren't in their groove. But I gutted for South Africa because gutted for Wales because I think, you know, to get so close and to fall short over just some sort of niggly bits. And also for Dan Bigger as well,
I know.
You know, just to get caught, a bloke who, you know, deserves more than that. And you know, it just, it's one of those things where it's heartbreaking and you get so close yet so far.
Argentina. Did you ever come across Checker? You obviously played for him. Did you do? Yeah. You didn't do much with him.
No.
Checker opens with a win against the Scots.
I thought he was coaching NEC in Japan.
Well, he's now Los Pumas.
Yeah. But he was also, you know, when I interviewed him for the What a Flanker podcast, he was taking on the Lebanon Rugby League side.
Oh, yes, you were. Yeah,
but I think he must have sacked it off to then, because he then got an Argentina gig, because then I spoke to him and was like, I'm just being a consultant, and now he's fully in the mix. Because when they beat the All Blacks, he was coaching.
The thing is, like, those coaches just got to sit around and wait until a decent job comes up. Like,
yeah.
What are you going to do in the meantime? And you've got to keep active, haven't you?
Yeah. But he doesn't actually need to coach. That's the weird thing. Him and his wife run a very successful fashion business, even though you wouldn't know because his fash is almost as bad as mine. But he doesn't really need the work, but he just enjoys it.
Another entrepreneur. Which leads us very nicely on to the life and times of George Cruz. Only one of us said four Southern Hemisphere wins. So I'll pat myself on the back for that. I'm certainly not going to get applause from you. France 42, Japan. I know. France 42, Japan 23 as well. So Galtier's stock just gets deeper and deeper in terms of talent available. We've touched on your career. So 14 years, four Prem titles, three European titles, 45 caps, British and Irish Lions tour, two World Cups, Rugby World Cup finalist. Do you look back now and think, for a kid who started at Dorking age 7, that was a good run of it. Yeah, I know. I've got the notes in front of me. Very helpful. But do you think back and think, that is a hell of a run? I achieved more than I wanted to. Do you think, bang, that was part of the course? Do you think, there's a couple of other things I'd love to change if I could?
Nah, like, overachieved, I'd say.
Really?
I mean, like, people, everyone's got to find their role within the team. Yeah. I wouldn't say I was an outstanding rugby player. I was probably good at finding out what my role was in the team and trying to do that as best as possible.
What was your role?
Well, Haskell, what was my role?
Great attention to detail on the line outs.
Yeah.
The brunt of a lot of jokes.
Yeah.
Basically, Paul Gustard, I can't say what he said, but basically...
What did he say?
Remind me never to ask Haskell another question. Yeah.
Basically, we were to defend not like George, essentially, and then we would be okay.
That's quite harsh, isn't it?
No.
It's more of a joke. So George would always stare at men, and we kind of wanted to be ball watchers,
on the pitch?
Not men,
but
sort of everywhere, really. Right. You know, that was kind of the...
Where are we going with this?
Yeah, I don't know.
We're a show for all shapes and sizes.
Come on, mate.
But also you were extremely hardworking, knew your role, executed it, attention to detail, were consistently kind of spot on with that line-out, created an incredible line-out. You basically did the job that nobody else could do. And when carried and defended, you were on fire. I mean, I think every team needs a George Cruz. I would always have a George Cruz, just as long as he doesn't say anything.
Turn that one around. Fair play.
Turn that round. That's what
I do. Is that fair?
I think in good enough teams or good enough cultures, you can recognise where your strengths and your weaknesses are. And I probably bought into that. You know, especially the way we played at Sarries, we played at England for a good chunk. It's like the set piece was everything, defence was everything. That was where it was all built. And then, like, everything else can be added onto that. And more often than not, in big games, that's where a lot of it's won. It's, you know, tied to games. Your pressures come under, you know, skills come under pressure. And, you know, those sort of things are the ones that you fall back on. So I think my role within that is in line-out stuff is, yeah, I fully accepted that. I bought into it. And that's probably where I managed to extend my career or get, you know, stay in a decent enough team.
And
like
he
Sarries.
Cost me a few fucking... So when you say I'm being harsh... I always knew that if I wasn't going to be in a team because the six was jumping in the fucking line out, so was the seven. And you know that him and Borthers would have a nose off, and he would have gone, oh, for Chris's stats fuck. Purposes, he would have gone with, I'll get the guy that can jump. Even I could jump, but they just.
What?
Yeah, I could.
Wait, you couldn't catch it when you were in the air.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. There was a two part thing we needed to work on that one. Yeah.
At a fondue set.
Did you find the right home for you in Saracens where you could therefore flourish, or did you become a product of Saracens? Did Saracens unlock you, or did Saracens?
I mean, I wasn't at another club, so I guess they coached me into the way that we played.
Yeah,
and I think with Sarries, probably it was like we started like ridiculously simple. We got hammered for years for being a boring club, which we were in terms of set piece, kick, line out, maul, scrum pen, penalties.
Yeah,
like very boring. And I think over time, then obviously you got to evolve and stuff. And they found a bit more of an attacking game plan, with keeping the basics of mauls and D and all that sort of stuff. So I think, probably a product, but also, you know, they have very good coaches. Like Paul Gustard as a defence coach, unbelievable. Like a properly good coach, along with all the setup that they've got. Al Sanderson, again, as a breakdown sort of forwards coach, unbelievable. And it just clicked, I think. There was just a good enough group who'd been there long enough, who probably cared long enough or enough to get go with it.
Four Prem titles and three European, as we said. You can play one of those games again.
Yeah. Leinster one, I'd say. Like Leinster's always, they're, it's pretty much an Ireland team, right? Yeah. So that Leinster one in 2019.
That's the one that meant the most.
I think so, yeah. Just because we were losing.
Was that Marseille? Where was that? Nice?
Newcastle.
Oh, Newcastle. It was the
real hub of rugby.
In Newcastle. And why? Because it was...
Because we were losing and like, I think, yeah, we were losing it. We had Mako Sinbin before half-time and Mako then had to go off because he was injured. And we just like turned it on second half and it was so enjoyable. Like, yeah. And then obviously the memories off field and the, you know, finding one of your mates who's pooed himself in an alleyway, like these sort of things, what? Did I say it? Sorry. We can cut that
needs a bit of detail around it.
You can't name him.
It's like guessing.
Have a guess.
Forward.
100%. Yeah.
Right, so don't name him, but you need to
front row, second row or back row.
What is this?
You need to explain. Where were you? How did you find him? And what state did you find him in? Just paint the picture.
God,
you don't have to go. Did I mention the
I found outside of McDonald's.
Right. So you were walking,
chicken nuggets on the floor. Picked him up. like was
he passed
fine.
Out.
Nah, yeah, he was bent double. He was pretty screwed. And then we were walking back home, arm over shoulder. He then it is a bad story. He then tripped. Fell about five, I've never seen someone fall sideways this long for so long. He fell about 5 or 6 meters sideways onto a homeless person who then
this is amazing. Yeah,
who then like squawked,
like squawked.
Yeah, like made a like I don't know a noise only like I don't know. Yeah, yes, exactly that.
Yeah,
exactly that. And after I picked the man in question, he yeah so he'd.
So as he'd fallen, he'd fall shat on the home. Okay, let's get this up. Okay,
you know, we put out three social media clips a week.
So paint a picture. You walk past. There was someone bent double on the floor with chicken bones.
You picked him up and gone,
listen, no man gets left behind. Yeah. The wolf pack, Saracens, I love you. Held him.
Yeah.
As you were stumbling, he's tripped, hit a curb, fallen onto a homeless person. He's gone, as he's fallen, he's released his bowel, shat himself. Has he got himself up and you've realised he's shat?
No, we had to pick him up, and it was noticeable.
He noticeably shat himself.
No, like you know when you're not, maybe you're my niece or something. You pick him up.
You picked him up over a head and sniffed his arse.
You know immediately what's going on.
Oh, so he's fallen, and then what did you say? Oh God, you shit yourself.
No, it was just a game of just trying to ignore it.
Oh, ignore it. And then did you put my arm around him?
Did they continue on the night out, or did you?
No. I mean, there's a lot more to this story.
Yeah, so did you get him home?
But
do you shower him down?
There was an episode of that.
Really? Did you get him in for his front? Because you didn't just leave him and go, oh, I can't bother with this. You took him home.
But teammates.
Yeah.
You've got to look after him.
Did you burn the clothes? Did you bin bag the clothes?
I think there was a donation to the hotel.
Right. Oh, is it a hotel? Okay. So it's a hotel.
Yeah.
And then, but were you on your own or did you manage to wheel him into a bath? Did you spray him down?
There was a few of us. Yeah.
And who physically showered him down? Was he in a state? Was he crying?
Yeah. No, there was...
Was he crying? Was he like passed out?
He wasn't crying. He was just, a zombie.
Oh, so he was a zombie and you're going, oh, X, you've shit yourself. We need to shower you down.
Yeah.
And then you had to, and you pop him in bed?
Yeah, tucked him in.
And then did you go back out and piss?
No, the night was done.
Really would draw a line under the night. Well,
I was just trying to think of the five Saracens pillars of humility and whatever they are. Just wondering where this one fits in. Teamwork. It does.
Well,
it fits into teamwork.
I can't say it's happened to me.
That tests my teamwork. That would, for sure.
You're telling me that me and Tins aren't well, and Tins crapped himself.
I ain't hanging around for anybody.
No. The thing is, because once that happened, there's a story coming off the back. There's more.
But for me, that's the story. That's it. There. I left him at the point.
It's just going to get weirder and weirder.
Did he get a nickname like Poopant?
Yes.
Oh, he has got a nickname.
Row, second row, back row.
No, the nickname's connected with his name, so it's we're not here to bag people, but
it's quite hard to segue on from this story.
You can segue out of it by saying, "Well, that was a great night." Obviously, post matches.
Yes.
Is there an England game that you would like to play?
You'd have a million of those stories where you just think,
I don't know anyone who shat on a
but you'd attach whatever stories come with that night to a game or to an event or to a tour.
Yeah.
And it just makes the whole thing. Every time I think of that game, I get...
you feel a bit sick.
I need a shit, yeah. No, every time I think of that game, I just... Yeah, it attaches it to a different... It's like when you listen to a song and you remind yourself, like it's just... That whole piece.
So you tell you walk past a public tour, you go.
Yeah, you go.
God,
European glory.
European glory. I love that. What about an England game you'd replay again?
I like that. Talking of red cards, I like that Argentina one where I think Daly got
Elliot
a red
Daly
card.
Got
yeah, red card, and that was like you dig in, you have a bit good bit of crack. Apart from Daly, yeah, who's honestly, yeah.
Grand Slam.
One I'd play a game would be the World Cup final and hopefully win it. 2016, that whole tournament I thought was brilliant, and to finish it up in France was,
I think that was the most. That was definitely the most fun I've had. I mean, because the thing I was always jealous about with Sarries was that they looked after you on the field, looked after you off the field. You had a great collective. You're all a group of players that came together. And I know everyone always levels the stuff against you, but I don't believe that. I think the only people who could have felt aggrieved, as I've said on record, were Exeter. Because when it comes down to finals, extra marginal talent on the bench stuff will make a difference. The rest of the league who you pumped, I've got no complaints. It does not make a difference because it's a team sport. If it had been like F1, Yeah. And one team was allowed to invest in all the motors and engines and it was down to the most money, but the other one couldn't. That's why they brought a level playing field in. It doesn't actually make a difference, I don't think. But I wondered, was that time with England when Eddie Jones first came in your most fun that equaled kind of the Saracens kind of fun?
I think because we were also winning a good amount of trophies. I think we did the double that year at club level. So, yeah, that was like, you look back and you think that was class. But then I don't I haven't finished my career last year and go, oh God, I wish I could have been in the 2016 days or replicated those. That, like, because you're having different memories. Yeah. You know, in Japan, you've travelled the world. Like, I never thought, it'd be great if I could have had another year like that. You're just on a different journey. I don't really. It all goes quite quick as well. You don't sit back often and go, whoa, like, this is good. I'd embrace that. Like, but
I think as well, it's hard because when you're always on to the next thing, and I think you're quite a humble guy. You always would never bracket yourself in the same thing as me. But I think in the coming months, it'd be quite nice to sit back and go, wow, Japan, wow, Premiership title. Because actually, you're right. Some of that stuff's gold dust. Some of the best players you've ever met have never won.
Yeah. I find that. That's what I find.
Johnny Wilkinson
mad.
Never won a Premiership.
Yeah, he did. He won it in his second year. But it was the Courage League back then. It wasn't the grand final.
But if he hadn't gone to Toulon, he hadn't won anything.
No.
Spent all that time loyal to the Premiership, didn't win anything.
Well, the issue there is that if that's your driver, you can just go find a team and take less money and fit into a team that is winning. Like, surely, that if that's choice? A driver.
Didn't know that. I would have joined Saturday.
But is that not?
I wouldn't have got in the team, though, would I?
Probably
not.
You would have, but like, is that not a choice to change your sort of your priorities and try and find a club that is on the up, like, you know, you could join for less or whatever it is?
I think it is. I think what actually you miss more than anything is the memories. The only thing that I have that gets me is the sort of green-eyed monster every now and then when you see someone go, I'll get more caps, 100 caps, win another trophy. Mm. You're like, fuck, I really want that. Mm. Not in a bad way. It doesn't keep you up at night, but it's just that moment when you tune in and you see. You're thinking, I was really happy with my career. I couldn't have done more with it. But I'm always built to want more. And actually what you value now are the memories. So when I see you guys and we laugh about this time, that's what keeps you awake. But we're the only thing on earth that puts priority by numbers. Nothing else keeps priority with numbers. So we worry about caps, trophies, success, cash, money, cash, all that stuff. That's what motivates. Nothing else in the natural world does that, I don't think. And so it's really important to us, and especially in our career, it's ingrained. You know, if you don't get 50 caps, if you don't get this, if you don't win that, what is it? It doesn't matter, because actually, if you have the memories, that's what matters. But I think it's a hard thing to unprogram yourself or deprogram yourself, I should say.
And that, like, 50 cap thing... I've had so many people like, oh, did you not want to hang around and get 50 cap? I was like, well, it's just five more than the it's like, would I prefer to have a load of other memories or take the risk to go have other memories? But that actually, when people would ask me, I was thinking, well, actually, would I like 50? I was like, well, who's it pleasing? Who is it pleasing?
I know. And I couldn't agree, because I have it with the 100 thing. It's 75. I looked at it and I go, could I play more? Could I go on to 2019 World Cup? Mm. What would it matter? And it is such a... it never gets any better. Mm. Your thirst is never quenched if you set yourself by those standards. Yeah. Well, that's why I think we're so interested to talk to you, is because it is such a unique thing. Because let's be honest, I think if you went back now and wanted to play and you played well, I think with the England squad, the next World Cup would be 100% in your reach. I think Eddie Jones would bite your hand off, because I think you're a player that they don't have in the squad like you. And I think you could do that. But equally, I think it's brave enough to go and go, look, I built a business that you can obviously, Alex probably asked you about, that you want to stick and believe in, and actually you're happy. And if you can find contentment, that's the one thing about retirement, because I don't think there are a lot of people who are content. Like, I wouldn't say I'm content, which is probably why I do like 4 fucking million things, you know, trying to find the next kind of high.
Did you talk to Eddie about the decision to retire?
Yeah.
What was that conversation?
I don't know, Hass, you'd speak to him heaps, but like... He's the sort of person that will just always want to catch up at some point. And like regularly obviously he was in Japan coaching a few bits with Centauri and doing those sort of consultancy bits. But yeah, like he's just an honest guy, isn't he? And
did he say, if you're around, I want you back in the squad type thing or not?
He just said, make sure it's the right, you know, make sure it's what you want. Because like you probably, you know, you don't get to do it over again and so on. So
unless you're Joe Marler, when actually you do.
Yeah.
He's tried three times.
Yeah.
And some guys can retire and unretire. Retirement now doesn't really mean retirement.
No.
Yeah.
It's not in the boxing world, it doesn't either.
Tyson Fury.
Retired, is he? Not retired.
Well, of course he'll come back. Retired until there's 100 million on the table.
Yeah.
Mayweather's retired, no more. He's had three more fights.
Yeah.
The other thing I wanted to ask you is about leaving Saris, because obviously that was, I mean, an amazing dynasty, which has had the challenges and the criticism that's received. But was it heartbreaking to leave Saracens? Did it just feel like, you know, the right time to go? How did you make the decision to go to Japan, particularly when a lot of the others said, we'll stay?
Yeah, tough one, because there was spits on the table. And I had made that decision. I know it conveniently works out, but I had made that decision. You know, I'd spoken with Eddie heaps and Mark McCall sort of when I was 27, 28, saying at 30, I will be moving on to something different.
Really?
So I'd made that sort of decision. So for me, it was tougher then seeing people, like them seeing them go through that. And also it made me go like, well, okay, well, I might pull out of what I was thinking of doing to then
help,
you know, to then stick around for that. So, I think ultimately, like, the fact that I was happy enough with the planning of that decision, that made it in my head. Like, I didn't feel like I was jumping ship, you know, when that sort of thing did happen.
Yeah. And how did Japan come about? I mean, I presume, did you look at France? Did you look at...
Yeah, looking at France, looking at... I wanted to do something different because, you know, grew up South London, south of London, lived north of London. That's like my whole life. So I was like, right, I want to do something different. And I think... For me, there was a couple of offers in France. Looking at them, and I looked at them in good depth, but the bits in Japan, I was just like, especially off the back of the World Cup, I was like, this is just a mad place. Like, what an opportunity. So I think it coincided, and you never make decisions just for one reason. It's never just, is it cash? Or it's never just your body or...
Well, I think a lot of people, weirdly enough, I think a lot of people do, and they come to regret it. You see a lot of people who sign over here or sign from other countries and they do it for cash, when actually... What's your price of living? What's your price of happiness? What's your price of rugby? Yeah. Is it rugby going to make you better? Are you going to have more journeys? And the sensible ones, because you only make that mistake once and go, like I swapped from Nike for Adidas for no other reason than I thought it was a bit more money and I thought it was going to be different. When I should have stayed at Nike. I should have done that. It's the biggest regret I had around that time, because someone convinced me to do it and I did it all for wrong reasons.
Yeah.
And I still think about it now and think, fuck's sake, what was I doing? And then
could have been Jordan, mate. Do you know what I mean? You could have invested
Air
in Beats
with
and
yeah. people, whatever what are those
Air Hask actually got springs in it, you can't get off the ground.
Air Hask, Jesus. One flat tire.
Weighted diving boots they would be. Yeah. You made it for a whole multitude of decisions.
Yeah, And when you actually start looking at, I guess, maybe in that point of view, you start weighing up and almost putting a figure on, okay, well, what does spending more time with a family, what does being the opportunity to do business stuff, how does that mean to you? And I actually spent a lot of time with Andrea, the England, like, psychologist.
Yeah.
And just talking through those decisions, more as like a business plan for myself in terms of, like, where does the importance sit? And then once you've made that decision, it's like, I guess you don't have a regret because you've got facts based on, it's not like, well, you've got 2 weeks to sign this contract for this. Like, you know, if you plan it early enough and you've got yourself a bit of like a self business plan or whatever it is, then you make it based off the right things.
That's so considered. Like, I would be surprised at how many people do what you've done. Like,
there are so few. I mean, that's what's falling out of this conversation is that you're kind of operating at a level whereby you're playing international rugby at the very highest level, you're winning silverware, and yet actually it seems a very natural decision to say, actually, that's been great, but I want to go and do something else.
I love the considered approach.
Yeah.
Talking to a therapist and go, or a person and making a plan and making a decision, a list of priorities, instead of going, what we all do, what's going to pay this, where's going to do this, what's, you know, actually going, what is it I value in life? What is it I enjoy in life? What is important to me? What's my next adventure? Putting it all down in black and white, actually taking the time to categorize it, going, I stick with it, then you have no, it's like you said, you have no doubt. And it doesn't become, you don't question yourself.
Yeah, it was a good practice. It took about 2 months to do, but, you know, it was a good practice.
How did 4-5 come about?
So Dom Day,
yep,
2018, was injured. I also, in January and February, I also had to have an operation in 2018. Took it, CBD, and got good benefit out of it. But then off the back of that, there wasn't really any good tested ones. There wasn't anything you could really, because obviously as tested athletes, you really need to know what's in the product. So we thought there was a good opportunity. Seen CBD in America and Canada, bought into it off the back of that. And now have a range of sort of like wellness products, so vitamins and so on. We're in Boots. We look like we're going into another couple of retailers. We're responsible for people, which is so
not,
weird.
Not a lot we know about.
No, it's just like pitching someone like Boots is very different. Like we turned up, I turned up, had a black eye and crutches going into a meeting room to pitch
did
someone
they,
to put
I
your
presume
products.
You explained that rather than saying these are the side effects of the product. Exactly, I'm exactly, here to sell. I'm fascinated in your job. How many people have you got in the business now?
We've got, we're all in for the first time the other day. There's 9 of us.
Okay.
So,
and where are you based? I mean, how does the business actually sort of function? Are you selling overseas? Is it just UK? Are you
UK? We're also in South Africa. So we've got Brian Abana sort of involved on that side.
Clever.
We're in Dis-Chem over there and we're going into it again, hopefully a couple more retailers. It's just been a bit of a wild journey, really. Some good growth. We've got a really good group of investors who are very helpful. For someone who hasn't, I did a business degree, but obviously we're just so heads down in rugby to then have this other thing where I think the good thing is you just meet so many different people. Obviously you get to meet people and interview them on that side, but I think you meet so many people. And actually when you look at how small the rugby circle is and how small the amount of conversations you have, they're all about the same things. They're all like, but then when you go do something outside, it's, I don't know, that's the thing I found most interesting, just the ability to be able to talk to whoever you really want when we've got a background like this, which
did
is
you find
obviously
it
very grateful
a
for.
Bit more balance as well to focus on your rugby, so you felt like, so you knew that if rugby day wasn't going well or playing side was taking too much, you then could switch into this and that would give you more balance.
I honestly do think so for the first couple of years. Last year, like it's been tough because, like, you know, there are commitments you got to have on field, which I was being paid to be a rugby player first, so I probably tilted it a bit too much last year, but definitely in the first couple of years to have an interest outside again. There's so many cliches around making yourself more rounded, all that sort of stuff, but the fact that you speak to multiple different people, you get a better idea of actually what other people are doing, what real life is like, because otherwise it is a shock, I'd imagine. You know, people going straight into a, I don't know, 9 to 8 to 6 and just being like, this is wild.
Mm. Are you you're doing 5 a.m. till 10 p.m. Are you on that train or are you able to keep yourself in a sort of relatively normal vein?
Yeah, we've done culture bits around making sure that, you know, especially with COVID, the whole sort of workplace from what I've seen seems to have changed in terms of people need more time, more headspace. They need probably a more rigid sort of schedule. I'm not going to email people outside of work hours.
Yeah.
And I'm in Japan firing them off at, like, you know, wherever, whatever time they're picking up. And they're like, so you get that feedback pretty quickly and
you've
got
to
adapt
to that
sort of stuff.
We don't.
You haven't changed much on that. Yeah. Can I ask you, because CBD sort of popped out, as you said, whatever it was, 4 years ago. And what did CBD do for you? Not necessarily your product, but what did CBD do for you over painkillers and rehab and perhaps the more sort of standard?
Yeah, so I think when we've done surveys with our customers, the main three, anxiety, recovery, so pain, and sleep. For me, definitely sleep. Like I'd have the product and I do feel noticeably calmer off the back of it, and off the back of that, I'd have a better night's sleep.
Can you give Hask a ton and a half?
Yeah, you can drink
preferably yesterday. that's really interesting. And your role in the business is...
Sort of network investors. I'm now that I'm back, a lot more face to face bits. So, lots of event work we want to do. Sort of gym based bits. Just linking up. Just getting more face to face. Like obviously with Dom predominantly in Dublin and myself being in Japan, it's like we haven't been able to do that side of it quite well. Like the events and so on. And hence why I probably pushed a bit more into retail on that side. So. Hopefully we'll go like retail and then go back into a bit more D2C and run that route.
What does Dom do?
Dom does retail, sales, and comes up with just ridiculous ideas, which, you know, get shot down a lot of the time, much like that.
You've got to have them to shoot down.
I know someone else comes up with a lot of ideas.
All mine go through, though, thankfully. Which bit of the job do you hate the most? Having gone from a life of coffees, bit of tackle bag, home by three for PlayStation. Yeah. What is the thing now? You're like, God, I miss the old days.
I mean, the old days, like, there is no pressure to do. I mean, obviously there's pressure to do rugby, but there's so many days off. You get three good days off, you know, three good days off. And it is mad. I say the old days as in I've been retired a week. So,
years gone by. Yeah.
But it's the biggest bugbear, probably just having to be super organized. Otherwise, like, you disappoint other people, or you mess up someone else's schedule if you haven't come back to them and these sort of things. So I think as rugby players, like, we think, you know, sending a letter on a day off is like the highest bit of admin you could possibly do. And you're like, oh God, I need a nap.
I need a coffee break from the
break with the boys. Because I've sent off a council tax email or something. So I guess just trying to switch the brain in terms of making sure I'm super organized in terms of how you structure your list, all those sort of things are new to us. And I guess maybe in a business or someone who's come from uni, you'd go and you'd step load those and you'd have someone above you who might be able to show you in the right direction and all sorts. So that's probably the biggest sort of step up, just being super organized so that you can be most effective.
How important were Saracens, which we've often said in the past, are the best club at getting their team set up? How important were they in your journey?
Brilliant. And like, they haven't invested, they haven't done any of this sort of stuff, but they've invested their time.
They haven't.
Four, five,
basically
Saracens.
A shell company. Yeah.
Had to change our name recently. But like, brilliant in terms of the fact that they just got you up and doing something from, you know, there was under 24, you'd have to be doing something, a degree or some sort of like trades course or something. And that sort of getting you to do something just gets you to do something. And then we're fairly competitive. We'll roll with it. You build into something else. But I think the idea of getting people out in the off day doing something was definitely back then pretty unusual. And then obviously off the back of this, like even the RPA as well, like they were super helpful. You know, I think they introduced us to people who introduced us to getting into boots and so on. Like, these things don't just come from nothing. I think you got to be receptive to taking that on board. I think, a lot of players are pretty lazy and not.
There are people to help, basically, aren't there? If you want it, they're up there to help, because people go, oh, I can't really find resources. If you ask them, they'll help you.
Yeah, 100%. And I think both Saracens and I'd say RPR, I don't have a bad word to say about them.
This has been absolutely fascinating, because I think it's the first time I've genuinely, having worked with you for 2.5 years, you'll understand why, it's the first time we've had someone on the pod who has just got everything under control. Yeah. And rugby is such a game of chaos, and it's injury and it's disappointment and it's elation, etc. And it just comes at you from everywhere. And a lot of the people we speak to have found it really difficult after rugby. It's so inspiring to sit and listen to someone who reached the top, achieved everything he wanted to, and knew when the right time was to go and on to something.
And being proactive.
Which is ready to go and take to another level.
But also, I think, I mean, we'd obviously always got on really well, but you would, like, jokey conversations, you'd be saying, I can't jump, I'd be saying, snoozer, sort your chat out, you put everyone to sleep. And that was sort of the limit of our conversation. But obviously, I know you built this
business. The CBD that was putting everyone to sleep all this time.
But, you know, I mean, Cruz has come up with some of the best nicknames, Beaker from Sesame Street, snoozer, like, there's tons that kept us going.
Legend.
No one ever said that. But
that fell through the gap.
But what I love is actually listening to him, the cerebral approach to all of it.
Yeah.
That having heard it firsthand, like, none of it was reactionary. Everyone's thought out. There's a lot of peace and contentment there. I think the business is very exciting. If you look at the quality of the people that have invested in it, it's a very, very exciting thing, and everything seems under control and it's right. Obviously, in the world of injured players, there is always someone that has to come in as a medical joker. There a figure?
Everyone's got a figure.
If they put a big C in the sky, would you come back?
It wouldn't be a figure. I've been offered more now. Now I'm retiring.
Really?
Yeah. This is actually sickening. But
really? Yeah. And you've got the integrity to say no?
Well, I've just got an opportunity and something else I want to do.
Fine. Oi, fair play. I mean, you're a better man than I am.
What was the figure?
It was fuck off.
Invest in the business.
I would come back if it was a medical joker and I thought there was a chance of winning a trophy in a club, which I thought I'd be able to create some good memories, but it'd have to be a short enough stint. But I mean, also, they've also got to want me. I might look like a...
How quickly could you get fit again if you had to? Were you someone that retained it or lost it?
I think a couple months maybe. I mean, obviously it'd take a lot more. You need games, so you need at least three or four games to get back.
Are you a bit smaller since the Japan days?
I'm 8 kg smaller, yeah.
Yeah, I was about to say, not in a bad way, because there's nothing worse than another man going, you lost a bit. Yeah. I don't mean like that, but yeah, I mean you just look leaner, you look good for it.
Yeah, you just don't have to eat that much over there.
No. Was it all the running as well, like two-hour training sessions?
Like we eat, pasta, bread all over here, and they're eating like soba noodles and stuff like that, which is...
Or a little piece of fish, little segment of fish in a bowl, and you're like, have more of that? No, you're like, what? That was... fuck was that? Or miso soup? Like, no. Well, I mean, what? That's 200 calories.
Who'd have thought you'd be the poster boy for transitioning from rugby to? I think, honestly, we talk about it so much on this show, and you are the one person we've had on who has nailed it.
But I think I've set myself up in a good enough space. But you just we don't know what's going to happen with business. You know what's happening with the economy, all that sort of stuff.
But. Yeah, you're in as good a place as anybody could possibly be coming out of the game.
Yeah, I think the thing is I'm happy enough with what I've done is a big thing, because I think that can probably haunt you. And I don't think I will have that.
Good on you. I love a man who's got it sorted. In 2022, where the world is melting all around us, it's really nice to sit down and chat with someone who says, I've got my ducks in a row.
And also what a great, and there's never, most people who fit into that comfort zone than Dav, the career he's had.
Yeah.
Trophies, just medals, adventures, England's World Cup final.
This is really...
It's just like... It's
good.
You're making me blush, lads.
No, but, yeah, but that's what I mean. Great. It's not just someone who's had like a mediocre career who's had to, nose to grindstone, has had to battle it out. You've got someone who's done all that, and that, and it's amazing.
Imagine his nose to the grindstone.
Jesus! Well, you could do with your nose to the grindstone. Nose to the sander.
A couple of hours a day, I'll book in my schedule. Honestly, I'll get my PA to do it.
Cruz is the only person who had to put an Opro nose shield on in case he took someone's eye out in training.
You may be a multi-billionaire in the making, but you've still got Hask in your wing mirrors. It's an exhausting place to be. Good on you. Well done. Thank you for coming to see us. Will you keep in touch?
Thank you for having us on. Absolutely.
We'll watch the growth.
Where can people get the products?
They can get them on 4-5.com, spelt 4-5. not the words.
You know our listenership well.
You can get them in Boots. I think there's a deal at the moment in Boots. But we'll put a code... GBR20. Yeah, we'll put that on the website for the lovely listeners.
If Hask gets inside your head and makes you feel anxious, we've now got a solution for you via 4-5.
If you don't want to listen to me, put the CBD on your ears and you still won't hear me.
There you go. Good on you, George. Go forth and conquer. Just before we finish this week, a few bits and bobs, as always, to tell you about. First of all, if you haven't seen it, it was really, really good fun to do. Rugby Players React with World Rugby. It's a new series. It's out over the next few weeks. Tins and I sat down with rugby royalty Zinzan Brook, Dan Bigger and Sir Lawrence Delalio to rewatch some of the big World Cup games that they were involved in throughout their career, and also other games that they would have watched alongside most of you. We did that ahead of Wales taking on South Africa, so there are a couple of those to reflect on. New Zealand taking on Ireland this summer, of course, and England who are in Australia. So those were the themes that we discussed. The Zinny one is out already. Go and check it out on our YouTube channel and don't miss the Delalio and Bigger ones over the coming weeks. We did have a lot of fun doing it and hopefully we'll get through a few more next season as well. Good Scousen Rugby is back. Three incredible athletes and entrepreneurs. The theme is growing. Joined Elmer on this week's Good Scousen Rugby. Emily's busy, obviously, moving house at the moment and then heading back into camp, so hopefully she's all right. Not a long off-season for her with the World Cup looming into view as well. So instead, we had the Worcester Warriors, Steph Evans, founder of the women's kit and apparel company Rugget RFC. We had Harlequin's Emma Swords, who is the founder of the headwear company Bonsi, and Wasp's Flo Williams, who is the founder of the sports marketing company The Perception Agency, who are doing great things for women's sport, now working for Matter as well. They take the perception of the women's game to task. So that is a really good listen at the Good, the Scousen and the Rugby. And a quick nod and a high five to the Red Roses, who are back in camp as well. Wasps scrum half Claudia McDonald is in England's training squad less than a year after a serious neck injury. So well done to you, Claudia. Good to see you back. The 26-year-old was told the injury had probably ended her career. Not so. Great to see you back, Claudia. Go well to all of the Red Roses. We have been The Good, The Bad and The Rugby. We will see you next week. The show is produced by Shara Kilgallen and The Good, The Bad and The Rugby is a Folding Pocket production. Have a very good rest of your week. Bye for now.
Thank you so much for listening to The Good, The Bad and The Rugby. It can't have been easy.